let me start by welcoming everyone. The meeting was actually convened after a request from the Auditor General to brief the committee. We felt that we should welcome the request and move that we are preparing our BRRR or RRR. What's happening with my tongue? Report. We thought the briefing will really add on what we have already have, especially enhance our understanding of how, you know, the outcome of each of the department and each entity was based on. So you're highly welcomed, and we're looking forward to the briefing. Let me also welcome the members. This is the meeting day today, our committee meeting day. We meet on Tuesdays when we are not in session. Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday morning. So I want to appreciate the fact that you are here today. I'm going to hand over to the secretary to give us apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a couple of apologies here with me. One is from Dr. Labi, who is attending a workshop of the Standing Committee on Appropriations today and tomorrow. The same applies to Honorable Singh, who is also attending a similar workshop. I've got another apology from Honorable Holomisa and Honorable Marai. They didn't mention what they are occupied with today. And those are the apologies that I received. Honorable Mavasa will be joining us a bit later. Thank you.
Thanks, Pilot. I think we must indicate, I understand the apologies from Dr. Vashin, especially Marae, and when Holomisa is a standing apology, he's never attended the final meeting. But Marae should provide us with a reason, because he normally does that. It leaves me with the suspicion that he doesn't know. What happened to Ngonyama?
Sorry, Chair, I omitted his apology. I received it. He is away from Cape Town.
What does that mean? Away from Cape Town. We were all away from Cape Town. Cape Town. I don't know. This to me is not an apology. The three opposition, I think, they must really give us authentic reasons why they are not here. Anyway, I will recommend that we note them absent, because really you can't. It's not. We want to know, because they are paid to be in Parliament. They must tell us what are they doing if they are not in Parliament. Okay. Otherwise, let's continue and hand over to the Office of the AG for the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members. I just would like to introduce the team. I am Lawrence from Season. I'm the business executive responsible for, amongst others, the economic development portfolio. To my left is Mr. Paul Tirote. He's our corporate executive. He's responsible for this portfolio and also for Gauteng and Northwest. And to my right is Mr. Ahmed Mula. He's the senior manager directly responsible for the audit of economic development. As Chairperson, as discussed with you before the meeting, we will then go through the bit more detailed presentation just to give the members some background about why do we include certain things in an audit report, and maybe also just to get a brief understanding of what is in an audit report and what certain items mean in a audit report. Then we will take you through the audit outcomes of the whole portfolio, and after that we will allow time for questions, any questions from the members. Just briefly, the legislative background is the requirement in terms of the Public Finance Management Act that entities must prepare financial statements that fairly present the state of affairs, and they must submit those financial statements to us for audit within 2 months after the end of the financial year. The Auditor General must audit and submit audit reports within 2 months after receiving the financial statements. If you look at the requirement of the Public Audit Act, Section 20, it stipulates that the Auditor General must issue audit reports, and those audit reports must include either a conclusion or an opinion on financial statements and the financial position, compliance and financial management and predetermined objectives. This is very important, and why we highlight it is if you look at the structure of our audit report, you will see this again in our audit report. There will be an opinion on the financial statements, and I'll take you through the different opinions now that we can issue on the financial statements, first of all. And secondly, you will see that there's a section in the audit report that deals with compliance with laws and regulations. We will normally report on compliance. And then there's a section where we will report our findings on predetermined objectives. That's the reason why our report has got those three sections, because it's a requirement of the Public Audit Act. If we look at the different audit opinions, there's four different opinions that we can express on the financial statement. The first one is what we call an unqualified or unmodified audit opinion. That is when the financial statements are fairly stated, and the opinion will basically say that, in my opinion, these financials fairly present. That's the best that you can get. Then the second one is qualified. Qualification is normally when we're unsatisfied with one or two or three different items on the financial statements, which we cannot express unqualified opinion on, and then we will normally say, except for the financial statements fairly presented. So we will, for instance, say, except for assets that are not fairly stated, the financial statements fairly presented. You will see the faces are changing color. Then we get to disclaimers. That's the opinions that you don't want to see, and you won't see today because none of the entities in your portfolio got any of those opinions. The disclaimer is when the Auditor General is not in a position to express an opinion on the financial statements. And the basis of that is normally what we call a scope limitation. We could not get the information that we needed to get to the conclusion whether the financial statements are fairly stated or not. Then the last one is what we call an adverse opinion. Adverse opinion is where we express the opinion that basically says that because of the matters highlighted, these financial statements do not fairly present. So we actually go to the extent to say we totally disagree with what management is representing in the financial statements, and therefore these financial statements do not fairly present. Those are the four different opinions that we can express. And in the next slide, we've basically highlighted it for you. You see, we also use the terminology unmodified. Maybe just to explain to you the terminology unmodified. Unmodified basically means that in your audit report, it's just the opinion which says that these financial statements fairly presented. An unqualified opinion with nothing else in your audit report. The moment that there's, for instance, an emphasis of matter in an audit report, then we call the audit report a modified audit report. And I will take you now to exactly what emphasis of matter means, because this is where there's sometimes some misunderstanding. If we, for instance, just look at the current situation with the Department of Economic Development, it's a new department, first year that we've audited it, and it is an unqualified opinion with other matters, and I will explain to you now what the other matter deals with. It basically deals with the two other items which we've asked to report on in terms of the Public Audit Act. So there will be either some findings on performance information, or there will be some findings on compliance with laws and regulations. Now, the ultimate goal, you must have heard about clean audits. So the bottom of this slide is just to explain to you what is regarded as a clean audit. And a clean audit is unqualified opinion with no findings on predetermined objectives and no findings on laws and regulations. You can have an emphasis of matter, and the reason why you can have an emphasis of matter is an emphasis of matter does not necessarily mean that the entity has done anything wrong. I'll explain to you now why, because it's very important to understand what an emphasis of matter is all about, but I will discuss it with you in more detail just now. This just gives you the basic audit report structure, and if you go to page 72, for instance, in the Economic Development Department's annual report, there is the full detailed audit report, and you will see that what is summarized on this slide is the very same structure that you will see in that audit report. So it basically starts off with an introduction. Then very important, what is the responsibility of the accounting officer or accounting authority in the case of a public entity? What is the responsibility of the auditor general? And when you've got some time, it will be good to read through those different responsibilities. Basically, to summarize it, it means that the accounting officer's responsibility is to make sure that he presents financial statements which are accurate and complete. That's why I highlighted to you earlier on the requirements of the PFMA. And in order to external responsibility is to audit the financial statements and to express an opinion. Then in the audit report, as I've highlighted to you already, you can get an emphasis of matters or additional matters. And then of course the section in the report that deals with the legal and regulatory requirements, that's where we report on any findings on predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations. And then very important is that and that's also a requirement that the Auditor General must give a view on control. And therefore, in the last part of the audit, actually the second last part of the audit report, we will normally then conclude, let's say there were negative findings in the audit report, we will then conclude then to say what led to these findings. And we define it in three different areas. The first one is leadership, the second one is financial and performance management, and the last one is governance. Leadership deals with what is it that the leadership should do to ensure a positive audit outcome, typically to make sure that there are policies and procedures, that there is capacity, that there is skill, and basically the training control. The second level of financial and performance management is more with regard at the management level. What should management do on a day-to-day basis? Management should implement the policies and procedures. Management should review. Management should ensure that the laws and regulations are adhered to. And then we get to the third level, which is governance. And at governance, we basically focus on key areas. For instance, does the entity have an internal audit section? Does the entity have an audit committee? Is the audit committee functioning? Because those are important structures that support good governance. Lastly, in the audit report, you can have a section, and this section is not included in all audit reports, where we report if there's any investigations that have been conducted at the entity, or investigations that are still happening. We will only report if we believe it is investigations that are material to the financial statements. So we won't necessarily find everything in there. If there's any performance audit that has been conducted by the Auditor General or that is in the process of being conducted, we will report on it. And then if there's any agreed upon procedure. The agreed upon procedure basically relates normally in our environment to donor funding. If there was donor funding involved and the donor requested us to do a specific agreed upon procedure, whether the donor wants some procedure to be performed specifically with regard to normally the agreement and requirements that deals with a specific donation. Very key to understand is a concept of emphasis of matter. An emphasis of matter is not, as some people think, a lighter qualification. So it's very important that there should not be any misunderstanding. Sometimes we would get the feedback, why do you qualify? Why don't you just rather emphasize? Now, it's got nothing to do with the materiality of the matter. In terms of the auditing standard, the auditor is basically required to draw the attention of the user of the financial statement in certain instances, and it's done by way of an emphasis of matter. And it will basically just highlight them something which is already adequately disclosed in the financial statement. It's not adequately disclosed in the material, it will most probably end up in a qualification. I'll give you an example. For instance, it's a requirement of the standard that if there's litigation at an entity and that litigation might have a material impact on the financial statement and the outcome of that litigation is uncertain at the end, the entity should disclose that in its financial statement. The only responsibility of the auditor in terms of the standard is to draw the attention of the users to that litigation. So we will typically have in the emphasis of matter to say attention is drawn to note 25, for instance, in the financial statement. There's litigation currently and the outcome is uncertain. So there's no wrongdoing on the side of the entity. It's only a disclosure and an emphasis from the auditor's side. We will also maybe sometimes disclose some other important matters which I will highlight to you now. We also can report in the auditor's report what we call an additional matter. Now, an additional matter is to draw the attention to any other matter than those presented or disclosed in the financial statement which is relevant to the user's understanding of the auditor's report or the responsibility. Now, I'll give you some examples now. And you will clearly see the statement underneath. The statement underneath in the auditor's report will clearly say, my opinion is not modified in respect of these findings. So that's why we're saying that a clean audit is unqualified. You can have emphasis of matter, but no findings on predetermined objectives or rules and regulations. Typically, matters highlighted is in the context of national departments is the reporting framework. Because it's still modified cash basis, we highlight that in our audit report. Significant uncertainties, that's the example that I gave you now when there's litigation. If an entity has revised its previously issued financial statements, which is not the case of any of your entities, that will be emphasized. When they restated any of the prior year figures, we will just emphasize it. That restatement will be disclosed in the financial statements. We will just draw the user's attention to the fact that some of the figures have been restated. If there's a material underspending, this is normally on votes. The accrual one is also normally just related to votes. That is normally when an entity doesn't pay its creditors in time, and if you take the accrual for the creditors at year end and you deduct that from your surplus, then you will end up in a deficit. We will highlight that for you. Remember, on cash basis of accounting, in the case of the national department, you're not supposed to exceed your budget. So what can happen is, if an entity sees that it's going to exceed its budget, and because it's on the cash basis, you can just stop to pay its creditors. Then it will not exceed its budget. But we go and look in the accrual if there's any unpaid creditors, and therefore we deduct the unpaid creditors over 30 days, because in terms of legislation, you must pay within 30 days. We take the ones over 30 days and we say these are the possible ones which might have been held back because of the potential overspending. It hasn't been the case in any of your entities, so you shouldn't be really concerned about it. In the case of public entities, if there's a risk of a going concern, and there is one of your public entities that is a going concern risk, you will stand up here. So you will see, we will then highlight it in the audit report to say there's a going concern with regard to SAMAC. But now if you look at the SAMAC and the reasons for that, it's purely because the intention is that SAMAC will not continue to exist in its current format. So it's important that we highlight that to the users of the financial statement. They must know that this entity that I'm doing business with might not be existing in this specific form a year from now. And that's why it's important for auditors to highlight it. Additional matter that we might highlight in the audit report is, for instance, if we weren't the auditors in the prior year, material inconsistencies included in the annual report. This is an interesting one. This is if an entity includes something in its annual report. We don't audit an annual report, but we do review it. We look if there's anything in the annual report which is inconsistent with any of our audit findings. We will normally highlight it to the accounting officer to say, look, here we are, we disagree with you. They would normally change the annual report. If they do not change the annual report, this is where we will actually highlight it to say, but there is something in the annual report which is inconsistent with our audit findings. When there's certain schedules which is presented in the financial statements which we haven't audited, we will highlight that. That's an additional matter. And if the financial statements that have been previously issued have been withdrawn, we will also highlight that. Now, if you look at the audit outcomes of this specific portfolio, economic development is an unqualified audit opinion. And I think it's important for this committee to acknowledge that it's a new department that has been established. And there's normally a lot of challenges in a new department that's been established. So I think having an unqualified audit opinion is actually an achievement for a new department. The other matters that we highlight is just the financial reporting framework, and as I've explained to you, the only reason why we include that is because departments are still on a modified cash basis. We highlight that to the users. The other findings that you find in the report of economic development is that there were some findings on compliance, basically with regard to the PFMA trade regulations and the public service regulations. And if you look at the internal control deficiencies, and I will go through it in detail with you, there were issues with regard to leadership and performance management. If we look at the detailed compliance, the first item of non-compliance is that the three-year strategic plan does not include targets of all the department's programs. It's a requirement in terms of that regulation that your strategic plan should have objectives and targets, and that should be measurable. Although there was this non-compliance, and I'm quite sure if you look at what the department has done since that this will most probably disappear going forward. Although this wasn't in place, the department did develop a operational plan. Right, that's what we call it, an operational plan. Now, that operational plan, however, did have the targets and objectives in there, and it was measurable in there. Why it's important for me to explain this to you, there was this non-compliance with regard to the strategic plan. However, what was presented in terms of the operational plan was of such a nature that we could do the audit procedures that we needed to on the performance information. And that you will actually see in the audit report that we concluded that other than this non-compliance, we are actually satisfied with the performance information. And that is actually, again, quite an achievement. There was no human resource plan in place. That's a requirement of the public service regulation. Then there's a regulation which specifically requires that the payroll report should be certified. This is an important requirement. The reasoning behind this certification is basically for all the different section heads to sign off that people that are getting paid end of this month are actually employed by the organization. So it's quite a key control as we used to call it. Expenditure management. Audit evidence could not be obtained as payments to creditors were always settled within 30 days. It's a requirement of the trade regulation that payments must be made within 30 days after the invoice has been received. The systems which the department had in place did not allow us to actually compute on those orders and procedures. And therefore, something, if we now look from an oversight point of view, what you need to focus on, it is to focus on the, and we'll talk about the recommendations at the end, but key here is that the department should have a process in place. Once I receive the invoice, I should note on the invoice date received, 18 October, and then there should be a process in place to make sure that that invoice gets paid within 30 days. Bearing in mind, of course, that you must have been happy with the service that has been delivered. If you weren't happy with the service, there needs to be a proper documentation on why weren't you happy with the service. Procurement and contract management. There were instances identified where senior management members did not disclose their interest in suppliers to the department. It's a requirement of public service regulations that all senior management members should once a year declare if they've got any interest in any entity. That's to prevent an entity from doing business with any of the senior management within the organization. The closure has not been made by two members, however, there were no transactions with any of the companies that those members were involved in. The last one on the compliance deals with material adjustments that have to be made to the financial statements. Right at the beginning of the presentation, I highlighted that it's a requirement of the PFMA that an entity should submit its financial statements within 2 months after the end of the financial year. And the requirement is furthermore that those financial statements should fairly present. So the requirement is at the time when the financial statements are presented to us for audit, it should be accurate and complete. So when we audit and we do find significant adjustments that have to be made to the financial statements and the entity makes those adjustments, we still report it as non-compliant. And the reason for that is because the entity does not have proper systems and processes in place to ensure that the financial statements that it presents are actually accurate and complete. So when we talk about the recommendations again, you will see that there is a specific recommendation highlighting what should be done to present this. If we look at the internal control deficiencies that we've discussed earlier on under the different headings of leadership, financial and performance management and governance, we are saying that the areas that need attention in this environment is leadership, and the main reason that therefore is because there was still a lack of policies and procedures to guide all the operations of the department. So that's a focus area going forward. And then there were insufficient procedures in place to prepare accurate and complete financial statements. And that's why we just earlier on now discussed the non-compliance due to the fact that interior adjustments have to be made to the financial statements. The recommendations that we want to put forward to the committee for consideration and to maybe assist you in your oversight function is that there should be a focus on the implementation of an adequate review process of financial statements prior to submission to audit and also to ensure compliance with that specific requirement of the legislation. So typically, what the committee, oversight committee at this level will focus on is to engage with the accounting officers to make sure, do you have proper monthly procedures? Do you prepare regular financial statements? Does that financial statement get reviewed regularly? Is there proper sign-off by the CFO on those financial statements? Does that financial statement get reviewed by the audit committee? Audit committee is a very important role player in this process. Does the accounting officer review the financial statement? So to make sure that those processes are in place. Key in this is that currently national departments are only required by national treasury to do quarterly financial statements, and the requirement is not even that they do disclose all the what we call disclosure notes in those financial statements. Now this is sometimes where national departments run into challenges because all those disclosure notes are not system driven. There's lots of manual processes that you have to have in place to get those disclosure notes accurate and complete. So it's very important that the month procedures we got to bring.
Oh, okay. I think it goes with our documents are not the same as that one. I'm not sure whether you are.
Okay. It's possible that there's a bit of a version problem since I have to take the one from my computer now because the secretary didn't have one. So stick to the one that you have in your slide. You know, it's not combined. That's the only thing that you did. If your TV got someplace else, it's combined. So stick to the one that you've got in your... Yeah, it's a summary. Yeah, but actually we decided, I think I know what happened now, we decided to summarize it, so this is the actual version that we wanted the comment to be. But there's no real difference between what is in your slides and in essence it says yes, exactly. Then very important, and because it's a new department, it's to ensure that proper policies and procedures are developed to guide the operations of the department. And of course, those policies and procedures must always be aligned to laws and regulations. The policy, if the requirement of the regulation is that you must make payments within 30 days, you cannot have a policy to say we're going to pay 45 days. You know, there should be alignment. The third point we just highlighted to just make sure that there's enough focus that the department now totally stands on its own. What happens in practice is this department actually emanated or was part of the Department of Trade and Industry. So a certain section of that was then taken away to form the Economic Development Portfolio. So for us, they were still using the same financial platform, for instance. They were still using that, but they will have their own platform. They were still using some of the DCI policies, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's important to understand. It was the right thing to do because it renders a good result in the end of the day. Going forward now, they're going to split totally to be totally on their own, using their own best, their own controls, their own policies. So it's important that total segregation takes place as soon as possible. Very important is that it's a new department and the new organization structure must be properly approved and then those key positions must be filled as soon as possible. And then we recommend that there's an action plan developed by the department on all the audit findings, and that action plan should be monitored on a regular basis. As part of the oversight function of this committee, you can also ask the department to present the action plan to the committee and to actually maybe give quarterly feedback on the progress of that action plan. Ultimate objective is to ensure that in the end of the day, the result is a clean audit. We summarized for you the rest of the portfolio under economic development. Industrial Development Corporation is unqualified in terms of the audit opinion, no findings on predetermined objectives and no findings on laws and regulations. So that is what we call a clean audit. South African Microfinance APEC Fund of SAMAC is unqualified audit opinion. With emphasis of matter regarding restating the corresponding figures. So they restated some of the prior corresponding figures, and as I explained to you in terms of the emphasis of matter principle, we just have to emphasize it. So it's not necessary to say that there was any specific wrongdoing. Then as I highlighted to you earlier on, we had to emphasize the going concern principle issue because the entity might not exist in its current format in the future. Then there was some irregular expenditure incurred by the entity. It was adequately disclosed, so we only emphasized it. And then there was material write-offs of loans. And that's why we emphasized that, so So should you want any more information on that specific loan that have been written off, that's adequately disclosed in the financial statement. You can get the details of that thing. With regard to predetermined objectives, our findings were that all the indicators were not well defined and that reported indicators were not accurate and complete when compared to the source information. What we do during the audit process is if you report a specific achievement, what we do during the audit process is to go and test the validity of that achievement. And for that, the entity needs very good source documentation to enable us to conclude on the actual achievement. And in this case, we could not get that information. Findings on compliance with laws and regulations, they were also here adjusted to the financial statement. So it means that the control systems were not in place to ensure that accurate financial statements were presented for audit. Procurement and contract management, we highlight that because there were issues with regard to procurement and contract management, which then ultimately actually led to irregular expenditure. That's why you will always see the two together. We do highlight under compliance, it's a requirement of the trade regulation that each and every entity must have a CFO. So SAMAC does not have a permanent CFO at that point in time. We highlight it purely because it's a requirement. There was not a too negative audit outcome, and going forward, you know, most probably that condition will also not be filled permanently again, because the entity might not continue to exist in its current format. We just highlighted for you in the two columns that those issues can be linked back to leadership and financial and performance management. Kula Enterprise is what we call a clean auditor once again. Unqualified, no findings on predetermined objectives, and no findings in compliance. I think the current thinking is that SAMAC will be incorporated in Kula, so most probably the results will stay the same, unqualified. I think unqualified opinion financially, there were ever findings with regard to objectives and indicators and targets not consistent with the approved strategic plan. That is very important. You cannot have something approved in your strategic plan as an objective or a target and what you report on is different in the end of the day. Those things should not move. And then indicators are not well defined and verifiable. Once again, very important, as an independent user, it should also be easy for you to establish what should be needed for us to actually verify this actual achievement. Similar with SAMA, procurement and contract management, it basically means that supply chain, the correct supply chain management policies and procedures and requirements, the state requirements, have not always been followed. Therefore, there has been regular expenditure which has been adequately disclosed in the financial statement. So if you look in the financial statement, you will see that irregular expenditure is disclosed in the financial statement. And we can take it back the negative findings also towards leadership and financial and performance management. Competition tribunal unqualified, no findings on predetermined objectives, exactly the same as ISAC. There were some non-compliance with supply chain management which led to irregular expenditure, and we highlight that is due to financial and performance management from an internal control point of view. Competition Commission, unqualified, with an emphasis of matter relating to the restatement of corresponding figures. So they also restated some of the prior figures, we're just highlighting it. No findings on predetermined objectives. However, under compliance, there's material adjustment that has to be made to the financial statements, which means that they should put systems in place to ensure that financial statements in future are accurate and complete when submitted for audit. And then there were also some procurement policies not followed, which led to irregular expenditure. And we highlighted the areas of internal control that needs to be focused on is leadership and financial and performance. Honourable Chairperson, we would pass the answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Vuren. I guess this then clarifies members even further after our interaction with the department and the, and its entities. May we then interact with the prison?
Thank you, Chair, and I would like to thank the presenters for the presentation, which was extremely clear and lucid, and I would like to apologize in advance if I say something that is in is out of order, because I have had very little opportunity to attend all these meetings. But there is something that interests me. How do you reflect something in the auditor's statement that is not done? You referred when you were going through the entities to the fact that if your strategic objectives are not met in your audited statements, then there is a reflection in one of those columns on compliance, I would imagine, to that effect. Now, Kula had it as one of its strategic objectives, the establishment of Kula Direct, and that thing hasn't happened yet, and yet they have a completely unqualified audit. So I want to know whether there is a point there that that they didn't do this, and it's some years now since it's been part, or more than a year anyway, since it's been part of their strategic objective or plan anyway. The other thing is that I'm really interested in, because I also serve on the Trade and Industry Committee, and it's obviously there's a nexus between the work of the two committees. The merger issues around Kula, National Empowerment Fund, I think, and SAMA, would lead me to believe that there should be some reflection of that in the way in which the audit report is expressed. Now, if I'm wrong about all these things, you can just tell me too, but I thought those were quite important issues. Thank you.
Okay, except that the merger doesn't include the NAS.
No, that's
not. Yes, it's only the ICC SME unit. Babu Nduli?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Mine is also about the compliance. It's I'll cite an example here where the president in the State of the Nation address, he announced that the departments are going to fill positions within 3 months, and then all the departments. Now I'm trying to be specifically to ours, and we haven't seen that. And then when we're asking the department, they started to say no, because of the skills and all that. Now we were asking ourselves, why did the president announce that? Because what they are saying is what we knew, that it is a problem. But after the president, then we thought maybe there are ways of unblocking. Well, now I want to check here whether it's like this paying of the creditors or suppliers within 30 days, where you still find that it has not been done. But you find that the strategic planning, maybe it is not clear that how are they going to cover these 3 months, because I think after it has been said within 3 months, then there will be a strategy of how are we going to unblock the previous bottleneck.
Thank you, Chair, and we appreciate the presentation. Quite a simplified order. On the new department that is still trying to find its feet, I think in place we have a framework and legislation as a form of guidance as to what is to be done, the officials. And I don't think any new department could risk, you know, and appoint a large number of people who are not competent. It will always be very few people. And what is surprising is that people would be, you know, would complement to see that people in the department, like I say, that the department could really appoint many new people. There are qualified people, two people from other departments, and whenever there's something that is undercoming, like corruption, the same new people who are supposed to be 3.6, they're implicated. So it means they're competent in other areas that, you know, it's not good for good governance. Maybe we should follow what the department of the education is doing. That doesn't matter whether you're a new teacher or old teacher, but we must produce the expected results. So it's really difficult, even with appointments. You know, we have so many vacant posts, but at the same time, we have people complaining to us that they've been applying many, many times, more than many times, without success, and people who are qualified, people who are skilled. So we don't know which is which. But we hope that with your assistance, we will get there.
Mr. Tetsi, Babu Mabasa.
Problem of somebody that comes slightly late, you know, on buses. College chair, thanks, and my apology again for coming late. I just looked at one item here, which has always been my worry. The one on four audit report structure, emphasis, matters of emphasis, and then it says material underspending. Should I understand that you have noted the material underspending? Because if it is so, but I see a nod, so it means that was noted as a concern. Now then I even have a bigger concern. But how can we have material underspending when we have so many people who want to be assisted to start off their SMMEs, their cooperatives? That's one element. But the second element, how do we have material underspending while we have a huge gap between what could be first called the first world economy and the third world economy, or what we can call the haves and the have-nots? That gap will never be closed unless that area is seriously attended to by both the implementers and the observers. In the observers, it includes ourselves and yourselves. Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thanks, Bob. That's my question. Firstly, I just want to know, would we say this is an outcome-based audit? Following that would be a question whether the audit outcome by the AG's office, is it not sort of giving in way to things that are happening precisely because we leave everything to matters of emphasis either than, you know, bringing those issues as part of our audit outcome? I'll tell you why I'm asking that, because I want to know, for instance, if you've emphasized on a particular matter that has been corrected after the management letter, is that not giving a way for non-compliance? Because who says that matter will not be repeated, or that action will not be repeated? going forward. Because if you put that under, for instance, as you put here under, let me be correct. I'll try to be quick in terms of the pages. I want to be practical here. You're putting certain things under the summary of compliance findings, yeah? Yeah, I'll just use that one. But you don't make an opinion around that in as far as, or you don't link that to your opinion, because in as far as the description of what matter of emphasis is, you say we mustn't worry, it's not something that you should be worried about. I mean, if a matter of emphasis says there's been an irregular expenditure, for instance, on 1, 2, 3 is mentioning that. And here you come, Mr. Van Vuren, and say we shouldn't worry about that because that was later on, you know, rectified. What does that say to us? And it reminds me in my previous employer where you'd find an audit opinion being qualified. There's an opinion issued. But then somebody goes to Pretoria and it comes back, it's qualified, it's unqualified. Then you ask yourself, what's going on here? Because to me then it puts doubts, you know, into the authenticity of the work of the Auditor General. Why would an audit opinion change, for instance? That's why I'm thinking that, you know, we're experiencing corruption, we're experiencing all this, because anybody can go back and change anything, any information, and knowing that that matter will be put under a matter of emphasis is not something that to be worried about. And also you are mentioning here very important issues to me, very, very critical. For instance, internal controls. They must look at leadership issues, financial and performance management. And it's something that we should be worried about because these are compliance related. The deficiency is that there's lack of adequate policies and procedures in place. To me, it's a worrisome because to me, it forms the core of leadership, what the leadership should be doing. And if you notice a gap, and obviously this is a process, it's not something that you just found out. And it's something that you know I fail to understand in terms of audit. It's like we are doing it for the sake of things, for the sake of compliance, but really. We could be saving the country a lot in terms of any corrupt activity through audit itself. And I think this is a tool that you're not using. And there are inconsistencies that I experience in terms of the audit opinion, especially on issues that are very serious in other areas or departments and that are not that serious in others. Mainly because some are done directly by the AG's office, some are done by the outsourced companies. And in mostly you find that outsourced companies, the AG's office is not directly, you know, monitoring or very strict in terms of how they do those things. I'm just putting this as my, you know, the observation. I just want you to tell me whether I'm correct in the way I'm observing things. You make mention of a compliance issue in terms of two SMS members not declaring, disclosing their company. What about the other level? Because I thought there is a requirement too that they must disclose. Is that not to me a non-compliant issue? I'm happy that you are raising the issue of the organizational structure. I just want to find out if you were able also to, because I remember the committee raised this matter of the non-signed organizational structure or not reviewed, because the PSA says the minister must review, is responsible for the reviewal of the strategic plan, and on the basis of the strategic plan can review the threat plan. I mean, yes, the structure, I'm sorry, the organizational structure. Are we correct to say that needs to happen on an annual basis? Or is it a once-off signed for 5 years and it must be like that? And how then do we verify whether what is in the MTF, for instance, is applicable in terms of, because then the department can say anything and we must agree with that. You also mentioned the issues of targets and all that. It's the same in terms of organizational structure. If they say this year we're planning to employ so many people, what would, for instance, support that statement? And in terms of the budget review also, we don't know whether that is, because it's very important. I just want to know whether I'm correct in what we are demanding from them or what. I had a last question here, so let me look at it. I was just noting. Let me leave it here because my notes are now saying something is coming. It is fine. Can I then hand it over to you, Mr. Fanciri, for responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Serote will just start off by just giving some general background specifically to your one question about compliance, and then I will deal with the individual question.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thanks again for an opportunity to engage on the department. I think it's just an opportunity for us to assist you in doing your work. I just thought I should address some of the issues that indeed should be concerning as raised and interpreted by the portfolio committee chairperson. And I think my response is not going to be one that seeks to defend or not defend, but to say, if I can just start by outlining the process, and perhaps maybe starting with ourselves as a group of individuals belonging to regulatory bodies, to professional organizations. For example, I'm a member of SICAM, the Chartered Accountant, and so is the majority of the team. certain things and there's a certain level of conduct that I must uphold. And if I don't uphold, I run the risk of compromising my own career. So that's the first level that I just want to say that for me and for the team is a no-no to look the other way, to under-report, to misreport. At an organizational level, there are a couple of things that, including the part that has been raised as a concern around the terms that we use as well. But at an organizational level, there are a couple of internal and external processes to ensure the integrity of the audit process. First and foremost, do we comply with the international standards on auditing, which is an international standard, as the name suggests. And secondly, we, over and above that, not only subscribe to what is called the ESAI, which is the public sector base of the international standards of auditing, but we play a leadership developmental role. We actually lead that organization of international supreme audit institutions. So from a quality perspective, we like to see ourselves as playing a leading international role. And we like to think that we, from a technical perspective, are quite astute as an organization. The next one, I think, is to just say, to give you comfort on our internal and external quality control processes. So an audit gets performed. Admittedly, the audit, like any other audit firm, at execution and field level, is performed by trainee accountants led by assistant managers and managers that are qualified. That is how also the system, the standards will define how you are leading, or rather how you select your team members in terms of the standards as well. So you have assistant managers, you have managers, you have a senior manager, you will then have a business executive, and in certain instances you have myself signing some of the audits myself. But irrespective of whether myself and Lauren sign, we also oversee and do quality control over the process, over and above the quarterly interactions with the auditees. Where there is an external firm, if he was putting in, by the way, the standard recognizes Ahmed as the engagement manager, so he's the lead on the audit. Whether he chooses to have internal or external staff, so a firm, he remains accountable. We can perhaps have a different discussion when we are talking about an IDC, for example, where in terms of Section 4.3, there is the word that says the auditor general may audit. And in terms of Section 4.3, we do have entities that are quite large that have their own audit arrangements effectively with our permission. But when we have appointed a contracted firm, besides the pre-screening that happens, it is that gentleman there, for example, as engagement manager, who is our employee, who is an auditor general person, that is accountable and responsible for that audit. First line of engagement to senior management, with accounting officer, with the minister, we remain accountable, we don't delegate that responsibility. So where there is a perceived inconsistency around, we would take full responsibility and accountability for that. So the process belongs to us. And over and above that, now once the audit has been delivered, kicking the other internal processes that are external to him and the audit process. So we have a consistency review that is done by a separate team called AR&D. We have a which is done by an external firm again. So the external firm is coming in and going through the audit file and engaging us and saying, is this audit opinion supported by the audit evidence that is placed on file? And then engagement and so forth.
So then that is correct.
Yeah.
Pre-issuance review, is it, you're saying it's done by external firm. Would those firms that have, who are also involved in the auditing, also form part of the pre-issuance preview, or are they completely different firms that are not even involved in any way?
It will be
with the actual auditing as external auditor appointed by yourself.
The pre-issuance reviewer is a person that is independent of that particular audit process end to end. So he's the independent. He's the guy that keeps our process.
Sorry, what I want to find out is whether that person is, for instance, part of any firm that is also involved in the auditing.
A lot of them are. But they will be independent of the process. The reality is you've got a community of accountants out there. Some of them belong to them. Some of them are acting on under their individual banners. Some of the firms, all they do is pre-issuance review. Yeah. So those are the people that come in via a slightly different appointment process to appointing them to be subcontractors as well. But for example, there are pre-issuancers that can do a peer on him that come from a different office from our own office. But they are independent of that audit process. That is the prerequisite.
Okay, maybe we can pass with that understanding. I think we can pass. I just wanted to get the understanding.
The other process that is, the other two processes that I think are also quite important is the linkage to the performance management system as well, because there is another unit called the quality control unit that comes and inspects files. So we'll pick up the file. So yet again, another layer that keeps us honest from a file perspective. And lastly, and probably the most important review, is the review that is done by the regulatory body called ERBA. So that is the regulatory body for all firms that perform audits within South Africa. So they will come in and do a firm level review. They will come in and give us their perspective on how we are doing audits and whether they meet the test, so to speak. The one that was done was it beginning of the year was actually, I mean, it will be reflected in our annual report as well. That gave us quite a good rating as far as that process is concerned. And I think mine was just to try and put to rest some of the concerns that you may have, and I can always give you more information to give you a bit more comfort as far as that is concerned. But to be a professional and an engagement manager, like I keep referring to Ahmed, he's of the three of us, he's the only one that is recognized by the statement as engagement manager. So the responsibility on his shoulders is actually quite large. And as a professional, I think it is quite a huge responsibility. So issues of perhaps under reporting, should not be an option for him. Too much of a risk.
I don't know which area you were thinking, because we were responding to. Was it on the under reporting one?
I thought instead of being specific and coming up with a perspective, I thought I should just rather give you the perspective of how we go through that process. And perhaps it may cover some of the issues that you may have, but if it doesn't, we are
Okay, let's listen to others, and then if we're not adequately covered, we'll come back. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think while we're on...
Members, sorry, Mr. Fancieri, members, if you feel, I think this has been the practice since last week. If you feel you have a follow-up, please do likewise chip in to follow up on that issue while they're still responding on it, so that we save time after the responses. Don't wait until they went to another issue.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will just address your concern with regard to the underreporting, and I want to make use of the example of irregular expenditure, because you referred to how we report under emphasis of matter, and it's an important issue, and that's why in our presentation we're trying to address the whole issue about emphasis of matter. But maybe I need to be clearer on when it gets to the irregular expenditure part. How it works is that, like you will see, there's many entities that had irregular expenditure where we emphasize it. So the requirement of our standard is we emphasize it because it has been adequately disclosed in the financial statements. However, if you look at how we've actually reported this year and you read the actual audit report, you will actually see that we are reporting much more comprehensive than in the past. Because under two areas in the rest of the audit report, we will basically report now the non-compliance which relates to that irregular expenditure. And that, if I please can take you to the slide on Competition Commission, you'll see there with the last two bullets under compliance, procurement and contract management and expenditure management. That basically relates to one and the same thing, and it relates to the irregular expenditure that has been emphasized. So first of all, we emphasize there's been irregular expenditure, and we will quote the note number. That will take you to that part in the financial statements where you can see the details of the irregular expenditure, because the entity is supposed to disclose the details of the irregular expenditure there. If we are concerned that the entity does not adequately disclose all the irregular expenditure, we will raise it as a finding. They can then go and rework the whole population, and they can enhance their disclosure notes and include all of that irregular expenditure. And we will test again. If we are still not satisfied that the entity did indeed include all the irregular expenditure, we will then actually go so far as to qualify to say, as auditors, we are not certain that all the irregular expenditure have indeed been disclosed in this financial statement. So in this case, when we were happy that they disclosed all the irregular expenditure, we still then go so far as to report two non-compliance issues with regard to that very same expenditure. We're reporting in the detailed report, and we are saying that there was, because the PSMA determines that first of all you must prevent irregular expenditure, secondly you must detect irregular expenditure, thirdly if you identify it you must disclose it, and fourthly you must take action. So what we will do is we will report in the audit report to say that the accounting officer does not take adequate steps to prevent irregular expenditure. So that's in the audit report. And then we will report to say that there was non-compliance with the supply chain management prescripts, which led to the irregular expenditure. So we emphasize it, we draw your attention to the disclosure, and we actually report twice more in the very same audit report, actually on the same issue, just from different angles, because you can just say this requirement. So we are, in our view, we actually feel that we are really reporting in a lot of detail on this non-compliance.
Mr. Pansero, just on that, because we spent some time in the Competition Commission on that irregular expenditure issue. They indicate that because of the type of work they're doing, you wouldn't expect them. For instance, one was around how they procured legal services, because they can't anticipate certain issues. Therefore, it will be difficult for them to, in advance, say this is what we're going to be doing. And some issues, for instance, they would need a speciality, appointment of special of legal people with special, expertise. And therefore, how do you then go get 3 quotes, for instance? And yet, in terms of your audit, you say that's an irregular activity. So I think this is something that we promised that we'll follow up with you just to understand your reasoning behind that. Why did you then make it an emphasis, a matter of emphasis? That's why I think it is important, because they felt this is not fair. And they said they raised it with you, but you still put it as a matter of emphasis. And it's an irregular issue. And you're also telling us that they did disclose sufficiently. That is why you are just putting it and not putting it under finding. So that's what I wanted to understand, so that all members are clear when it comes to this one, why you're still there.
Right. Yeah. What is important to notice is that there are various treasury regulations as well as practice notes that deals with the whole procurement process. Now, the first requirement starts off in the Constitution, in which is echoed in the Public Finance Management Act, is that your procurement processes need to be fair, equitable, and transparent. So that's the overarching legislation. Then there's the practice notes issued by National Treasury and Treasury Regulation 16, which gives more details of what you should do in the case of emergency procurement, for instance, in the case of sole suppliers. And the biscops require you that you should actually have a database, for instance, if it's under 500, if it's under half a million rand, you should actually have a database. You should go and advertise what kind of services it is that you require. Anyone that you should put your criteria, like in the case of the Competition Commission, where legal service providers should then submit their proposals and their details to become part of the supplier database. And then you should actually, the regulation requires you that you should then get three quotations from your supplier database. So that's the process that needs to be followed. You cannot just, when you require legal services, go to the telephone book, pick someone, phone him, and give him the work. So there's a detailed process that you need to follow. I want to step off the, but I hope I've made it more understandable to the committee that we are actually, you've raised that the Competition Commission have raised an issue with you, and you're right, they've raised it with us as well. And what these stakeholders are raising is, you at one stage, that what our interpretation was, you felt that we sometimes underreport. They again feel, you're overreporting. You are reporting the very same issue 3 times.
I think the only comment that I'd like to make as far as that is concerned, I think irrespective of what the business requires and the reasons why from ODT to ODT we get explanation for the reasons why they needed to procure in a particular manner. The legislation is there. The PFMA is quite clear as to what options they have. It's their responsibility to comply. That is the first thing. The second thing is if perhaps there are extra circumstances that are beyond their control, I think National Treasury has a role to play, and they are the ones that should be engaged insofar as if there is a need for some sort of an exemption from their perspective. Ours is just to reflect what happened. So what happened is there were issues of non-compliance, and I think that is the fact, as the PFMA stands now.
Okay.
warrant anything other than just a matter of effort. See, that's my worry. Because I don't think if that has been a practice, is it happening for the first time? And if it's a matter of emphasis, does it continue next year to be a matter of emphasis again? That's my worry, you know, because it says to me then, that's why I was saying what I said earlier on, that it means we are encouraging that we just give them a soft slap to say, don't do it. You did it, but it's fine because you gave us the reason, even no matter when did you give us the reason. So there won't be any, you know, any eagerness to change, because they'll know that all what they need is an explanation, that's it. And we'll continue to get a clean audit or a very whatever. That's the only worry I'm having. And yeah.
But I'm thinking, Jay, is this not the same as a qualified audit? Because now I'm thinking, even if they say it's a qualified, then what? It's a qualified audit, and the department will continue and next year find a qualified audit. I'm just thinking that what difference does it make when it's you say it's just an embassy or it's a qualified, because I don't think they've got the power to convert. Mm. They just say it is this. Mm. And then, what? Same as members of parliament, you can say, hey, this thing is not right, and then what? If the department is not taking action. Mm.
You coming in, ma'am? No, but they have they have authority, because the audit outcome is a very important to me. It's a very important report, and I mean, if they say your department has qualified reports in 3 successive years, okay. it's a very bad reputation to a department. It is a difference. It's different because a matter of emphasis and a qualified, to me, they're very different. I don't know. This is what I'm seeing. So even though there's nothing we can do as a member of parliament, you can do something, because you can say, we're not, the treasurer, like they're saying, must say the treasurer must do something, because this is what is happening, but they continue giving them money. We can do something. We have powers as members of parliament, just that we're not using them sometimes. But theirs, that's why I was saying they must report, so that we are able then to. Because if it's a, you know, I thought a matter of emphasis is a very strong message. But when Mr. Van Furen said no, it's not something to really be worried about, then I felt, what's the use then? You see, because I thought it's a strong message to say, you do this next time, there will be some consequences. That was my initial understanding.
Honourable Chair, I think that the challenge is that we are also very technical. We think very technical, and sometimes we speak very technical. You know, I suspect we might not be speaking past each other on this one. I think if I can just clarify one thing.
Yeah.
The issues around whether to qualify this claim and so forth, in fact, the issue around whether we qualify or not, is an issue that centers around a fair presentation of the financial statement. So are the statements free from material error? Then it's an unqualified opinion. So now, when we start speaking about issues of irregular expenditure, for example, you will find it in a few guises. You will find it where the department has been unable to establish the extent of irregular expenditure, and we have been unable to establish it ourselves. And we say, you know what, we are comfortable with this, and we qualify regular expenditure, and you'll see a qualification of irregular expenditure. There is another instance whereby we do pick up regular expenditure, we identify it. the department is also identifies it and agrees that there is the irregular expenditure, and then they amend their account and they disclose as is required by the accounting standard. Okay, so they have disclosed it appropriately. Then we cannot qualify because they have fairly presented the situation. The situation is there is irregular expenditure of 10 billion, whatever the number may be. That is the fair situation. That's a fair presentation. What we then do is then we go to the emphasis of matter and we say, does that mean that it's something that we should be drawing to the attention of the end user of the report? Then we put it in the emphasis of meta paragraph and say, we draw the user's attention to an irregular expenditure of 10 billion. It is there, but we are just emphasizing it. So it has its strength, but the issues around whether qualification or disclaimer is really, at the end of the day, a question of whether the department has been able to present their situation fairly in terms of the rent and things and disclosure and all of those things. And I think maybe that is the clarification that may be required.
So what would the committee say, for instance, because we are one of the end users of that report. Here's a mental emphasis on irregular expenditure, but they have disclosed sufficiently. Why? What should we do with that?
Shouldn't accept it, because the reality of the situation is regular expenditure is driven by an act of non-compliance.
Exactly, but there's no recommendation in terms of the auditor general to that regard. As to, because you're saying it has been, you're saying there is leadership challenges, but it's a fair thing,
yeah.
Because they fairly disclose.
Yeah.
So. Can't we agree with the Auditor General that everything is fairly disclosed and let it rest? Because if we are satisfied that they presented themselves so well that it couldn't form an opinion, you know, form part of a serious kind of an opinion, what should we do? Because they'll tell us, like I was giving an example, say, no, but this is the situation. You know, we don't know what should we do because this is our situation is unique from others. We can't operate the same way with that and so forth. What should we say? Because that's the situation.
The biggest discussion around irregular expenditure is always about emergency procurement. I'm just giving you an example.
Yes, I know it has been my headache even before.
And emergency procurement is normally driven by bad planning. And somebody needs to accept it. They have not. And the reasons normally do not tie up with the reality as we see it. Hence I say, the process of procurement is actually very clear. It is very, very clear in the PFMA. You know? Now, when people have not planned properly and then they find themselves in the situation, instead of doing the process that is also defined by the Act, around how they condone it. So it's really a post-factual approval. You know, they would rather argue the reasons for debate because it's an easier option. You know, but the point that I'm trying to make is that irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure may be fairly presented, but the substance of it is a problem. The fact that the process that is legislated has not been followed today is a problem, you know, and the engagement must be at that level to say non-compliance has happened. And when we speak of recommendations, I think the Act is quite clear well on recommended action where such things have happened, you know, and I've given one of the options in terms of condonement and that's just a corrective measure. But the issue is around detective controls that must be in the environment, preventative and detective controls, so that they manage them long before we
asking this is because, you know, normally the scoper would blame committees that, you know, some of these things we should be able to detect them prior to us. You know, they say we're not dealing effectively with the audit, you know, audit report, for instance. But I think audit, you know, it's a serious thing. If you say this is an audited statement, to me it's very serious. And that's why I'm saying it's something that you've gone through thoroughly. It's unlike, you know, that statements that are done, you know. Audited is it might not be some kind of a forensic audit of some kind, but at least it is an audited. That's why I asked earlier on whether this is a performance audit. Is it a performance audit? It's not yet. When are we expecting a performance audit? Because we were told that it's going to be done as from 2009? Yes. Still not done. Because that will help us because it's very, very important so that we understand what is really happening. Like you are saying, we detected the department that it had a problem with targets. And we were told that no. It's very difficult to put targets on the work that we are doing because of 1, 2, 3. And because we don't know much about the newly established department, of course, there's nothing further we can say. But you also observed the same thing. And you're saying it's problematic because it makes it difficult to measure. And we agree with you. It's very difficult to measure when there are no targets. But then how does a committee like ours then look at such issues? I think it's a very important question because we need you to empower us to look at things in a different eye or with a different eye so that we enhance our performance in terms of interacting with the department whenever we interact with them. Because unless we do that, we are not going to be making any difference because this forms core of our job, you know. So the questions we are asking is because it frustrates sometimes because reading the Auditor General's report and thinking that, no, but you know, there's not a problem, that much of a problem, so what should we do? Because everything is clean, everything is nice, everything is just a note, because there's somewhere where in the report, I think it was a report on the ITEC, there were areas where there wasn't any explanation or remedial action, for instance. And we wanted to know why is there no remedial action, even on the Competition Commission. No, the Auditor General could not, you know, there wasn't any need, for instance, in this case too. We want to know exactly what should we do as a committee when we encounter such challenges. Because I feel if the Auditor General, for instance, doesn't help us in terms of the material issues, issues we may find that they are material, and you may find in terms of your report they are not material. What do we do? Because the department will say, or the entity will say, no, but we got a clean report. We don't have a problem. These are confusing issues. That's why you heard me earlier on speaking the way I was speaking. Because it's sort of, we might be labeled to be saying we are fishing, even on something that we shouldn't be. And they would be right, because your opinion says something else, and then you would also be saying, no, don't worry about 1, 2, 3. They are there, but they're not that much of a problem, of a concern as yet. Just lay our fears, earlier of fears, that is the road.
Thank you.
I'll give my colleagues an opportunity, but I must congratulate the chair for steering the discussion into a direction whereby this is easily one of the most intense discussions we have had with the portfolio committee around extracting value from us, and I appreciate that. Because the issues that you allude to now are quite problematic, because I think when a person says, and I saw it probably twice this week alone, where a head of an institution is called to account on irregular expenditure, and the first thing that they ask her says, I've received an unqualified audit opinion, the AGS created, so what? There is really a problematic statement for a number of reasons, because it just is actually misleading. Because when we talk about issues of non-compliance, and you were very specific about speaking to when am I going to see an audit opinion on compliance issues, I heard you say earlier. Now, when we're talking about a very specific, currently we put it as non-compliance goals under other matters. Okay, so it's in the audit report. But depending on fair statement, fair presentation, as I indicated earlier, it will not affect, it may or may not affect the audit opinion. Okay, so if it's there but fairly presented, it will come as another matter or as the emphasis on matter. Okay, so that's where it is currently. But in the pipeline, I'm not sure how many years to come, there is going to be a time where we actually have a compliance audit opinion, which would really assist in answering a lot of the questions from a usability perspective of an audit report. And I accept fully the input that you are giving. And I think if I can propose that for the time being, we agree on a method of empowering you with information to deal with that gap in the interim. Because there's lots of work that we do outside of just the audit opinion. There's a general report that we issue that covers a very specific area. It highlights wastage through this irregular expenditure and those types of things. It highlights the problematic trends. For example, if you wanted to unpack that kind of a presentation, we would be able to for your specific entities and departments. We do a lot of work on a quarterly basis that ends up with a discussion with the minister whereby we are speaking to the very specific issues that give rise to those types of outcomes. So the systemic issues, your issues that are a reflection of the current state of key controls, so those discussions we are having, and it is ideal that we have this type of engagement on that information more regularly. I think that should go some way in addressing, but I really thank you for the way the discussion.
Thank you. Babu Fang Kure. You have a follow up, Nene?
On compliance.
Yes, and Mabas, for your follow.
Yeah, so just for one to be educated. We have the payroll report not certified. What could be the reason? Because a lay person like myself could quickly assume that there could be, face that people who don't exist that are getting paid. What would be the reason for not, complying with the certification of the receiver?
Babu, thanks, Mabas.
Now, following on the discussion that has been going on, does it mean that yourselves and ourselves should regard ourselves as complementary, in the sense that we are all chasing different targets. When I say targets, I don't necessarily mean in numerical terms, but objectives, you know. Does it mean we must accept that you are chasing the bucks and we are chasing the lions, you know, so that we are not chasing the same things? Is that what we should accept? But and then does it mean that we must also worry about the real outputs and outcomes? Actually, let me say real, implying outcomes, you know, very seriously. And that real outcomes are of less importance to you. What would be more important to yourselves is outputs and numericals. I'm asking this just to understand our roles.
Thanks, Father
Mother.
Any other? Okay. Mr.
Van Chairperson, okay, let me first proceed with the ones that I can quickly answer. I think on the with regard to this...
We don't intend to extend your function.
With regard to the certification of the payroll, the members got a very valid point, and I mean the requirement is exactly there to prevent them from being what we call colored workers or whatever. Why it hasn't been certified, I think that's an important question to ask the department when you engage with them, because it is a very basic piece of a very basic control which should be executed on a regular basis. We also do, as Mr. Sorota has indicated, we also do the quarterly key controls evaluation, you know, when we would also highlight these things to the department. So it could be a matter of purely omission, not knowing about the control. I think that the department is in the best position to reply why it hasn't been done. But this is an example of a very basic control that hasn't been in place. I would like to... I'm going to spend some time now on performance information, and I'm hoping to address the member's question then with regard to what are we focusing on. But I think I want to just give one last view on your concerns about how do we report and what how you should deal with it, and I'm hoping to also partially address the member's question. I think our work is, in my mind, focus, and maybe in a certain extent it should tie in and complement what the oversight committees like your portfolio committee is doing. That's why we are here, and that's why we based the presentation in the format that we did, that we take you through the audit report and we link it for you up with the key control or the internal control deficiencies, either leadership or financial management. And that's why we even have recommendations in our slide. Our hope is that with all of that, we will empower you to assist you in your oversight function. I've put this slide back onto the board because what you've raised is a very valid issue, and Mr. Girotto also addressed it, that we would find in the press a lot lately entities coming forward in the media and say, we've got a clean audit. Well, if you look at the detail of the audit report, it's an unqualified audit opinion on the financial statements, yet there were matters reported with regard to compliance with laws and regulations and performance information. And that's why I specifically have highlighted this goal here at the bottom to say that the ultimate goal is an unqualified opinion with no findings on predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations. When I did the presentation of the entities, I indicated to you which ones falls within the definition of clean audit, like for instance the IBC, while the others are not clean audit. They're unqualified financially, but on the other two critical issues, they are still findings. If you take just one example of the Competition Commission's audit report, just to get back to the point about non-compliance, you will see that in paragraph 13 and 14 we've in detail reported on the non-compliance with supply chain management. So it's there. It assists this oversight committee to deal with it.
And if you look at paragraph 17 and 18, paragraph 17 we say the accounting authority does not exercise oversight in ensuring compliance with applicable laws and regulations. It's a very strong statement, and it's a statement that would empower this committee to be able to engage with the accounting officer and the leadership of the entity on it. Financial and performance, and we link it to say. This resulted in findings with regard to legal and regulatory requirements. On financial performance management, we made a strong statement to say that financial statements contained material misstatements that were corrected. This was due to there being inadequate reviews. So once again, we are saying to you very clearly in the audit report, there were inadequate reviews. You can engage with the accounting authority and the CEO on this matter to say, why did you not have those processes in place? I need to address some of the other questions raised by some of the members, but I think the one was specifically addressed by the chairperson, and I'm hesitant to answer it in her absence. So let me try and rather focus on some of the other ones which some of the other members are. The member that unfortunately also left already asked a question about performance information, and I think it links to the honourable member's question there. And that is, how do we focus on performance information? You see, the performance information, we first of all look at what we call the SMART principles. How is this presented? Is there a clear target? Is there clear objectives? Is it measurable? What will they need to present to enable to satisfy ourselves that they've actually achieved those objectives? But what is very important is the format in which an entity needs to report. And they need to report against their targets, and then there's a requirement that if you haven't met your target, you should give a reason on why you haven't met your target. Now, from the Auditor General's point of view, if an entity does not make its target, and I think there was an example given here of IDC has something specifically on the strategic plan, and there's a number of years that passed now and it hasn't been done, why isn't the Auditor General expressing a view on that? We don't express a view on that because what should happen is the entity should report any performance information that it has not been done. So the moment that they report it has not been done, we will not give a view on that because the user has been empowered to know this has not been done. And then the reason why it's not been done should also be disclosed. If that has not been done, then the committee can engage with the IDC on why that has in fact not been done. Our objective is to make sure that the information that is presented, that you should get a view on it, whether you can rely on that information or not. So if there's underperformance, the entity must report on the underperformance and the reasons for those underperformance. But the Auditor General will not take any specific view or pronounce in the audit report on the underperformance, because all the information is there for anyone charged with oversight to then go and engage with the entity and ask why this underperformance. That we want to make sure that the information that is presented in front of you, that you can rely on that information ultimately. I hope that also addresses the members' question there. So our focus is on the quality of the information that is presented to you. But if there's underachievement, then with the Auditor General doesn't not necessarily have a role to play.
Can you pass it through the chair, just so that we don't pass this point?
Even if the department says we aim to create, to help create 100 cooperatives in the country, and then it reports to you that we created zero, and it further says for that what was allocated was 1 million, and then your 1 million, here it is packaged nicely, it's still available. So just a comment what that would mean to you. To us, we know what it would mean to us, but we just want to check whether we are chasing the same things. Maybe when we cry, you celebrate, you know, or maybe we cry together and celebrate together, just to get whether there's an alignment.
I think that's a very important question, and I actually like your example, because this is, it's important that we need to understand that. So what is important for me in this scenario is that I report it accurately to you. To say my objective was to create 100 cooperatives, I have created none. Because then as an auditor, I'm happy that you haven't been misinformed. If they would have reported we have created, or depends on how they on how they report. Some entities will report partially achieved. Now, what does partially achieved mean to you? There was supposed to be 100, you said partially achieved. In those cases, we would challenge them. And then you will get that we report on some negative audit findings where we would say, you know, that the way in which they report is not adequate. But if they reported 20 and there's none, then I would have said in my audit report that is reported inaccurately. Because then you've been misled. But if the target is 100 and they've reported none and they say that the million rand is still there and available, then they've reported accurately to you and you are then empowered to take the right decisions based on that. So in our view, there's total alignment. And to use your example, to explain to you, we are not joyful as auditors because of that. But we are satisfied that accurate reporting has taken place to this oversight committee or to any other user of the financial statements.
So what's one of it, which is which there?
No, because they have reported accurately, it will be then, and if there's no other matters, it could then be unqualified with no other matters. But remember, you've got the accurate information. You know that it was objective for 100, they haven't achieved anything, you can then interrogate on that basis to say why. It was in your plan, it was approved by the minister, it means you should have had an action plan in place to make this deliverable happen. Why didn't you make it happen? Because that's ultimately the whole process in the strategic planning process. First of all, it's multi-year planning. So an entity cannot say, this came to a surprise at me, therefore, we're not in a position to plan for these 100 cooperatives. So therefore, you can engage from that basis with them.
Oh, then my last follow-up on this is that...
If departments understood what you are expressing, no department should ever receive a negative or an audit in whatever sense. So maybe some departments receive these because they don't understand what you are saying to us. But if they did understood all they had to do, even if they don't do their work for the whole year, you know, all they have to do is to do the arithmetic correctly. Because I get the sense that you are more about the numericals, which is the arithmetic, not the real and not the outcomes. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I now understand that it is so. And if it is so, then it means we are less empowered on our side, you know. We may as well say, hey, we are alone on this battle. Because we are not so much about chasing numbers alone. Thanks.
If a department at its objectives and the funding attached to those, but for some reason, let's say some emergency or a change of priority had to happen, it was unavoidable, and the funds were shifted to achieve that emergency situation, to deal with that emergency situation, but then it is properly accounted for and the reasons given, how do you report as an auditor? And what does that mean in terms of your either qualified or not qualified?
We must remember what is important, that we are at the same point with the performance.
performance information, and we are with the compliance in that we currently do not express an opinion on the performance information. I think that's important to note. So we give you the findings on performance information, which in our view should assist you to understand whether the information is reliable or not, or what other shortcomings there are in the presentation of the information. So in your example, Honourable Member, there's two important things that you, that one should take into account. The Executive Authority approves the strategic plan at the beginning of the financial year. And there should be a link between the strategic plan and the budget, and that's why the strategic plan should be approved before the budget. And that's part of this committee's overview also, is to look at the strategic plan and to look at the budget. And one needs to make sure that there's linkages between what is in the strategic plan and what is in the budget. That then ultimately gets approved by the Executive Authority. So if there's this in-year change, and it happens in many instances, if there's this in-year change, it could be a change in government policy, it could be a change due to many other reasons, that change should first of all be approved again by the Executive Authority. So in other words, we sometimes get it in our audit process that what was approved in the strategic plan is the following, but what they reported on again was something different. If that change was not approved by the Executive Authority, we will then report to say that what has actually been reported again is not what is what initially approved in the strategic plan, and it was not subsequently approved. So that's from the strategic plan and the predetermined objectives point of view and the performance report point of view. So you will then know that there was a change which wasn't approved. Furthermore, what is required of the entity to do, when there was such a change, they must disclose it in their performance report to say, it changed from this objective to that objective mid-year due to this emergency, and it was approved by the Executive Authority. Then comes the money part, because the money should now follow that change in strategy. Now, if you're in a national department, for instance, there are various rules that you have to follow to be able to move funds for a different objective, depending on what it is, because there are various rules for national departments. For instance, you cannot use capital expenditure for current expenditure. In other words, if you've budgeted to buy equipment and suddenly there's an increase in your establishment and you need the money to pay salaries, you cannot do that. You'll have to get treasury approval before you can do that. The accounting officers, in terms of the legislation, have got certain powers. They call it virement. They can pass certain virement. They can pass an 8% virement to move between programs. But they don't have the authority to move current to capital. They don't have the authority of capital to current. They don't have the authority to increase transfers to public entities without treasury approval. And so there's limitations. They can't move more than the 8%. So to move the money for that emergency, they must also follow a set of rules to be able to make sure that that money can then be legally used for that purpose. So it's a change in strategy approved. It's a communication in your annual report on why there was a change, and then to make sure that the money has been allocated the correct way. And that, for instance, the money side as well, we audit that intensively throughout the audit process when we audit the appropriation account for a national department to be able to for us to make sure that they have followed all those rules before they use them. Otherwise, it can result in either irregular expenditure or unauthorized expenditure.
Okay. Yeah, the violations are done before the adjustment. They can't be done after. So the annual report must be able to cover that. This is very, I think, in the statement, management statement, management letters, it's very easy to cover that, isn't it? If there is anything. In terms of letters that authorize such thing and all those things, you would ask that in a management letter if you are not sure what happened.
Yes, Jefferson, we will do. We will always, when we order that part, we will ask for the approval. We need your treasury. We see there's been a violation. More than 8% waste treasury approval. You've moved capital to current, where's your treasury approval? That processes we will follow. And when you will see when the national audit outcomes are communicated, there might have been instances in national provincial governments where all those processes have not been followed, and which then resulted in reporting in the audit reports on that.
But authorized, what I mean is that authorized vironments would normally be in the midterm review, because unless they are there, they are not authorized.
Yeah.
That's why they are done before.
They first approved by the accounting officer normally, then it's automatically included in the adjustment estimate. And I mean, like Mr. Sorote has said, and that's part of our processes, is that we would like to engage on a regular basis with the portfolio committee. So if you would like me at some point in time to maybe come and talk to you a bit about what we call the appropriation account, that's a very handy document which tells you about what money was made available for what, and if you look at the actual expenditure, it tells you what was it actually utilized for. And then it actually gives you, and there was a question about it, when there have been under expenditure on programs, they actually have to disclose the reasons for the under expenditure there. And we also focus on that during the audit process. So in the case of economic development, you will see that a lot of the under expenditure actually had to do with the vacancies that have not been filled. Now, there was a question about the vacancies, and I would like to approach it as follows. I think, first of all, I think it's important that the committee do have some engagement with the accounting officer on the vacancies. You know, why have these vacancies not been filled? We had some engagement at that level and even at the higher level, and that's why, so I think you must also get it first hand from the accounting officer. But in this specific case of the department, being the Department of Economic Development, there was a lot of senior post vacant, but it's specialist post. So although there's a call from the president, fill the vacancies, it's critical that you fill those vacancies with the right skills. You know, so that was part of the reason for that, and that links to a large extent to the under expenditure that did happen this year in the department. And then there was the link between the HR plan, which wasn't approved in time, which will now going forward. You must just remember, it was a new department. So the first day that the department is established, there is no HR plan. There is no idea of what this department should look like. There's no idea of how many posts at which level there should be. So to a certain extent, one can understand it. But going forward now, there should be no reason why that should not be done and why it shouldn't and why it shouldn't be properly approved. The chairperson asked the question, how often? I don't think there's a requirement which says it must be done annually, as far as I can remember. The requirement is just that whenever there's changes, it needs to be approved by the minister and by DPSA. But it makes sense to review it on a regular basis, and specifically if your strategy and your budget change, you will have to review your establishment to make sure that you have the necessary resources in place. And we talk about the gap analysis. You should continuously do a gap analysis between what is the establishment that I require, what is it that I have, and how am I going to address that gap. And then ultimately, the link with the budget. Because if you've got on your establishment 100 posts and you've got only money for 80, you sit with a problem. And therefore you will get the term in government that they talk about funded and unfunded posts. So there might be an ideal to have 200 posts, but for the next 3 years in the MTF, there's only funding for 100 this year, 120 next year, 160 next year. But that link is very important.
Okay. It's very important that we, you know, these things of alignment. I can't approve a new strategy, Mr. Van Zieren, and without that having any implication on my staff establishment, because unless I'm saying everything will be okay in terms of what, or I'll change maybe the format. Maybe I had said I want 5 senior managers, I would reduce that to 3 and then add the lower management. But that has implication, the budget implication, it has to be changed. And that has to be also reflected in the organogram, because now you've changed the 5 into 3 and you've added the 2 somewhere else. And if that's a change to me, it's material, because it says I've reviewed my strategy, my strategic plan, and then I have to review my organogram, and then I have to review also my budget. Because the budget every year, the baseline increases, or it goes down. It depends on the decisions, like you said. But it cannot just happen out of nowhere. There has to be something informing that particular decision. And that's what you must advise us what to do if that is not complied and you're not reporting on it. But to me, it's a compliance issue that cannot be ignored, because it's very important in terms of gauging the work of the department. Or, I don't know, this is what I'm thinking. Otherwise, it will be year in and year out. The same thing, we will be talking the same thing as a committee, and it will be like we're singing a song. We can't fight. Yes, sir.
I'm seeking an advice from the AG's office, particularly this thing of not filling the funded post. It's not about our department. I know that it is new, but it's a common thing. It's a norm in the government that they are not filling the funded post. And they always come with a reason of saying there is no skills, we have interviewed people, and then we did not find the relevant team. And this continues. And now I'm asking, let's say there is a question which is saying, how did your department perform when it comes to fill the post, the vacant post? It means then we are going to say, because it is justified, it's an opinion that you did not fill the post because there are no skills, then it's fine. Or as the committee, we're supposed to say, there is a problem here. Because they will come with that next year. Not comply, employ the people we're supposed to employ because we did not have the skills we require. And on and on, since we arrived in this parliament, it's the same thing.
I guess, how do we gauge the honesty? That's what maybe you want to find out from them. The honesty in the response, because here the Auditor General says, yes, we agree, there is there's a fair explanation that there are no people.
Yeah.
That's a difficult issue. Hence, I was asking the same question in a different form about compliance, and because that's a performance compliance issue. Included, for instance, the DG or the minister sign performance agreements with the president. The DG signs, I don't know, with the president or with the minister. So that is the thing. And then when you audit, okay, and there's a threat plan, do we audit whether the performance agreement is at par with the stretch plan, with the key performance areas of the strength plan. You see, those are the things that parents, because we're not privy to performance agreements. Maybe it's because we never requested for them. We don't know whether it is correct to request for such. But we stick into something that we perhaps know that it's a requirement. But should we ask for such? What's your opinion in terms of that? Is it something that's aligned, or somebody else checks something, we check something, and the poor DGs have to report to everybody about everything, you see? How is it supposed to be done? We need to understand this thing so that we improve the work of the committee.
Honourable Chairperson, members, yes. What we do is there's a requirement in the PFMA about performance agreements. For instance, stipulates that an accounting officer must have a performance agreement. And then it actually gives some very key elements that must be in that performance agreement. So from a compliance and legislative point of view, we check for that. But the alignment at this point in time, we also don't check for the alignment. But this oversight committee can check for the alignment. And this oversight committee can help the accounting officer accountable for performing in terms of the strategic plan. And for filling the vacancies, you can help the accounting officer accountable for that. You can ask for detailed information and detailed briefings on the reasons on why you could not fill the vacancies. When did you put your advertisements out? When did you get it back? When did you have your interviews? How many interviews did you have? How many candidates did you have? What the honourable member there write is a complex matter, in the sense that we also tend to find that sometimes people are appointed in positions and then they can't perform in that position. So one also needs to understand that an accounting officer has to make a very difficult decision when he fills the vacancy. It's not just about filling the vacancy and spending the money. I must also appoint the right person that will ultimately perform and will assist the organization in realizing its objectives. So you can interrogate the processes, you can look at the timing, but there will be some areas where there are scarce skills in the country, unfortunately.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Some of the reasons given for not appointing, managers or people are really provocative. We don't have much to see because we don't sit interviews. We don't even have the CVs or profiles of the particular people who came for interviews. And I don't think it will be seen as interference if we have the chairperson of the committee sitting as an observer just to satisfy us there. But we really don't, I'm trying to avoid using words just to put me into trouble, but it's really not a good experience. We are here for people who have elected us, and we have all these explanations that people cannot find suitable skills. And also, we have people who have been in departments. Well, this one will be a bit different because it's new. But like the member here thinks, not only this new department, but this other department as well. That there are people who have been in the department for quite a long time who are experienced. Why are they not trained to fill in that position? Because they are there, they know what is to be done. We have on-job training, so many types of training. Why don't they do that? It's difficult for us to convince training.
Okay. It's a frustration, I think, that the member is. Yeah. Anyway, I think we should. End here and say, for instance, in terms of the finances, we're going to from time to time request you to come to us on the appropriation account. I think that would help us even to understand how the department is performing there. But I think until the outcomes-based audit is done, we're still going to lament on some of those issues. Because, you know, you feel you are disempowered in a way, because as a committee, we don't have audit function, for instance. We don't have the capacity to do that. We are relying on the audit outcome for us to better engage with the department. So let's really thank the AG's office for initiating this meeting and for the clear briefing that you've given us. And the honest and responses that you've given us. Sometimes we ask questions, not because we doubt you, but because of experiences that we have. And unfortunately, until you clarify, we would not have a correct perspective or understanding of issues. And I think our questions have also helped you to look at other issues, other ways actually of improving your work. Because I guess you are doing this in order to assist us. That's why all of us were very happy when we're talking outcomes-based auditing, because it would mean you'll account for everything. It's no longer outputs, it's outcomes now. You'll be able to tell us that if you say 100, you'll open 100 offices, you'll be actual 100 offices. And you'll be able to give us all the information. Really, on behalf of the members, let's thank you very much for this. We are wiser, better, and better informed and wiser today because of the information you've given us. I think I'm speaking on your behalf, members. You are agreeing with me. Okay. Thank you very much. Just also to thank the members, because I think because of the type of work, some people don't really realize how frustrating this work we are doing. But these are some of the things that frustrate us. Was really, you read a report, seated alone, either in your office or at home, spend sleepless nights reading and trying to understand or to make sense of a particular report, and come to ask questions, you know. And all you get is very easy responses, and you must live with that. At the end of the day, there are certain things that are being said, and when you read, you understand why are people so frustrated, but you are there helpless, you can't do anything. So hence, we sometimes get agitated when we ask certain questions. Mainly because maybe we don't understand, or we're over-expecting, you know, from certain institutions. So bear with us when we ask those questions. But thank you very much, really, Mr. Fantirin, Dr. Serote, and Ahmed. Thank you very much. Members, I guess the meeting is adjourned, but if we can just meet for 2 minutes.